Can Bradenton become a destination for the arts? Cultural leaders say yes. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Sarasota is known around the world for its arts scene. Can Bradenton and Manatee County become a destination for the arts? Manatee cultural leaders appeared recently at the Manatee Tiger Bay Club to talk about philanthropy and the arts. We're bringing you highlights of that discussion.
My name is Misty Servia. I'm the president of Tiger Bay. I'm very, very happy that you are all here today. Following the speakers, we will have questions and answers. And that is the time when members of Manatee Tiger Bay can approach the microphone and please ask a question. We try to refrain from comments. With that, I'm going to begin with the introduction of our speakers. We always go alphabetically at Manatee Tiger Bay. So we're going to begin with Janine Amick, who is the executive director of the Manatee Players Club. She will be followed by Dr. Robin Bell, Director of Instrumental Studies, Professor of Music at the State College of Florida, and a conductor of the Pops Orchestra. Third speaker is going to be Don Anderson Cosgrove, who is also a former colleague of mine over at King, but he is also on the Board of Directors at the Village of Arts, the Downtown Redevelopment Committee, and a member of the Chamber's Green Committee. And then we will wrap up our panel with Martha Wells, who is the Community Engagement Director for the South Florida Museum. So thank you. With that, Janine, you're up first.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for this opportunity. Exciting things have happened in the history of the Manatee Players, Inc. as a company that started here over 70 years ago. You might have remembered us most fondly as the Little Theater right across the street on the riverfront that was providing our community an opportunity to engage actors and actresses in live entertainment experiences from stage. A little bit over 2 years ago, we have had the opportunity to move into the Manatee Performing Arts Center. With that move, the company's resident troupe, Manatee Players, moved along with us. So did a second resident troupe that many people are unaware of called Dramature. So we have been going throughout the community to elevate the awareness that the Manatee Players, Inc. is a corporation in the state of Florida, and we happen to be a nonprofit that manages the venue, Manatee Performing Arts Center, that houses two resident theater troupes, both Manatee Players and Dramature. Last year, we opened a conservatory of technical theater arts, both live performance and technical based. And this up-and-coming year, starting on August 13, when we open CATS and run through the end of June 30th, we will provide our community in the Gulf Coast region over 64 separate opportunities to come and see a variety of programs. So no more are we just providing Broadway series, 8 performances a year. We're going to continue to provide that in Stone Hall, which is what we like to say our staple in the entertainment field. But we've also added in our Bradenton Kiwanis Theater a program this year called Action Through Acting. And I'd like to spend some time on that. It's a unique initiative that we're doing this year. We as an organization are committed to providing the Manatee Performing Arts Center as a gathering space for our community to reach out to new audience bases to start talking about issues that are important to our quality of life. And what not better venue in order to be able to provide that is by bringing people in to see a great live performance and then giving them an opportunity to get involved in either talkbacks, book clubs, or getting involved in a nonprofit in our community that actually will work towards providing awareness in a variety of arenas. We've started a concert series this year. We've got a number of concerts that are happening at the Performing Arts Center. Many times when you come to the Performing Arts Center, yes, both halls are being used at once, and we may have a group of individuals upstairs in the Kiwanis Hall, either at a wedding, a civic organization. And so we have been trying to plan very carefully as we move forward to be able to engage a variety of opportunities for each and everyone who wants to come down and enjoy the new center and be able to not only be entertained, but we hope that in some way we'll be able to change your life. Thank you.
Dr. Robin Bell, Director of Instrumental Studies, Professor of Music at the State College of Florida, and a conductor of the Pops Orchestra.
I hold this topic very near and dear to my heart. I want to tell you that I moved to Bradenton on August 10th, 2009, that's almost exactly 6 years ago, to take the position of Director of Instrumental Studies at the State College of Florida. I spent that first year diving into my new job and experiencing all of the cultural events that mostly Sarasota had to offer at the time. Now, you must understand that I grew up in a town called Amarillo, Texas, and I think I've been so comfortable in Bradenton because if you took Amarillo and you moved it to Florida, you would have the town of Bradenton. This was just always been from day one home. Now, in Amarillo, Texas, if you want to experience some real culture, you have to go shopping at the fancy stores. If you want to get a glamorous haircut, if you want to go get some good culture, you have to go to Dallas. Well, I quickly saw that correlation with Bradenton and Sarasota when I first moved here. In fact, after about 6 months of living here, I was telling one of my friends in the Bradenton Runners Club who had asked me, as someone in the cultural arts, do you see a difference between Bradenton and Sarasota? At that time, I said, you know, I see Sarasota as cultural and Bradenton as agricultural. Now, to me, being from Amarillo, Texas, where everything is geared around ranching and oil fields, I mean, literally, I learned to play trumpet in a rodeo band. This wasn't an insult to Bradenton, but rather an endearing characterization that spoke to the integrity, work ethic, and hometown allegiance that I grew up with in Amarillo, Texas. Within 1 year of living here, there wasn't a restaurant I would go to where I didn't know somebody, where people didn't welcome me with a smile, and where people seemed generally grateful for the work I was doing with the college music students. I tell you all of that to tell you this. Boy, have things changed. In the past 6 years, as much as I loved Bradenton for its agricultural roots 6 years ago, I have loved even more watching our town grow culturally and embrace and support the unique cultural organizations we have here. We all know about the wonderful Manatee Players, the Village of the Arts, and the South Florida Museum, all gems in our community. What I want to talk to you about today are the emerging music groups in Bradenton and Manatee County, culturally speaking. I mean, nobody likes to hear the Dr. Dave Band at the Cortez Seafood Festival more than me, but I want to talk to you about art music that snowbirds, northern transplants, and cultural influences thrive on. Some of you may automatically think of the Anna Maria Island Concert Chorus and Orchestra, but did you also know there's a Manatee Concert Band? Randy Gilmore is the conductor of that group. They perform various venues in Bradenton, including the Neal Performing Arts Center. There's also the Gulf Coast Flute Choir. This is a bit of a more specialized group, but they perform many concerts in the area. If you like choral music, there's the Bay Chorale, outstanding community chorus based in Bradenton that performs at least two concerts a year at the Neo Performing Arts Center. And last year, the Sarasota Pops Orchestra, which I've conducted the past four seasons, changed their name to the Pops Orchestra of Bradenton and Sarasota in order to bring more orchestra concerts to Bradenton. It's been very exciting this past season to see the people of Bradenton and Manatee County support this orchestra and adopt it as its own. Over the course of our three concert season last year, we saw the Bradenton audience surpass the Sarasota audience in ticket sales. And there's just a remarkable energy in the crowd for our Bradenton Monday night concerts that isn't there for the Sarasota Sunday afternoon concerts. Some of that can be attributed to dinner and wine, but we'll take it any way we can get it.
I'm Don Anderson Cosgrove. After listening to those, it kind of, it's amazing that I'm actually here probably right now. You know, 3 years ago, my wife and I, we were in Colorado thinking where our next adventure might be. We finally decided on Southwest Florida after looking at Hawaii and some other places. We got here, we spent a year in Sarasota, heard about Village of the Arts, visited, took a look around, and we moved into the Village of the Arts 2 years ago, September. And kind of dove into what's going on here in Bradenton, dove into the village itself. The history, real quick, I just wanted to touch on that. I don't know if everyone knows it. It was a blighted area in the late 90s. City made a decision, and some very brave pioneer artists came to the forefront to come in and start taking that part of the city back that had been neglected through many years of course, people exiting the city itself and moving to the suburbs, which was a problem we had nationwide. After about 2 years there, they created the Guild of Manatee, actually the Artist Guild of Manatee, and that just celebrated its 15th year this past January, and again this year, where there's going to be a bit of a celebration for it, where 16 years of an organization, a nonprofit like this, to still be with us, I think, is quite an accomplishment when you have artists and business people trying to find common ground to stay together, which is not an easy thing to do. Today in the village, it's continuing to be taken back with great communication between the city, Realize Bradenton, the police department, code enforcement. It's taken a group of a lot of people to work together to bring the village back and start making it a great place to live through the tapestry designs is being implemented right now as we speak. Also this year, through many committee meetings between the city, the expansion now where the village actually crosses over 14th, which is going to be quite a dynamic change. We've invited those businesses. There's quite a few different businesses that can complement the village and vice versa, where we can work together to help 14th become part of the village and the village to become part of 14th. One of our plans is to start a fix-up program. There's a pilot program that was done in St. Petersburg a couple years ago, and it was implemented last year, of going into a neighborhood and getting some funding, private funding, to help artists fix up properties but still keep them affordable for those artists to uplift a neighborhood. And we're starting to talk with the group that did that, so we, instead of reinventing the wheel, we're going to try to get on one of the cogs of what actually makes that wheel turn. We're in the midst of recruiting artists around the country, where with our reach out program, we're getting some. We're going to have one visiting from New York who's a filmmaker. We've got a couple of other artists that are coming from the Carolinas. So it's just a lot of good energy what's happening in the village. One of the other goals is to find ways to actually start taking back the housing, because it's a very, I call it a problem, where right now the village is 35% owner-occupied, maybe 38% now, and we want to, our goal is to get that to 51%, because if you can do that, you can take a community back, and you can do it on the ground. Of course, the big project is the Manatee Inn, the DDA redevelopment project over on 14th. Our central core is going to be key for millennials and boomers, because whatever millennials like, boomers like, and vice versa. Maybe it's just the influence of the grandchildren and the grandparents. That's all I've got right now. Just a reminder, we have an art walk. Take one more tour and help out an artist. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Martha Wells from the South Florida Museum, and I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of the museum with the hope that I can give you a little bit of a nugget, something that perhaps you did not already know about the museum. And since we have 4.5 billion years worth of material, I'm not going to go through all of it, but I have notes so that I don't stray. Just a reminder that the museum started in 1946, pretty much in this location. So hopefully you all have visited. I'm not going to ask, but I hope everyone has visited somewhere in the last year. The cornerstone of our collection was the archaeological materials relating to Florida's first peoples, again, from local archaeologist Montague Talent started out. So that's one of the things that I personally love about the museum, is it started by members of the community, for the community. Snooty the Manatee arrived in 1949 and celebrated his amazing 67th birthday last month. He is now the official Guinness World Record holder of the oldest manatee known. And also, we are very proud that he serves as Manatee County's official mascot. We are the largest natural and cultural history museum in Southwest Florida. The closest thing to us would be the State Museum up in Gainesville. So, again, we hope that's a gem here in the community. The museum is home to the Bishop Planetarium, which I hope everybody has visited. We were able to install a new projection system not quite 2 years ago. That is truly state-of-the-art still, and to have that true for 2 years is phenomenal in the world of technology, but there's really fewer than 50 of them in the entire country. And it is an amazing tool for engaging people with science, astronomy, going out to the ends of the universe, looking back at our Earth, and just doing some really cool, fun stuff, too. So, and then, of course, the aquarium where we have the manatees and all of the museum's exhibitions. One of the things that's interesting, I think, for a lot of folks is you don't see the vast majority of what we have at the museum. Our collection is about over 40,000 pieces now, depending on how you count individual things from a shell to the mastodon. And so that level of volume, it's why you may think you see a lot, but there's a whole lot more that you haven't seen yet. And you can go through the museum and look at things from 4.5 billion years ago. We have a meteorite that was part of the origins of the universe. It's as old as the Earth is. And it's there so that you can put your hand on it and touch something that has come through outer space and landed on Earth. And to me, that's a pretty phenomenal thing as we start to contemplate. We host dozens of different exhibitions every year. Some of them are the very large ones in our East Gallery. Right now we feature the Mystery of the Mayan Medallion, which is different from anything we've had in the last several years. Very interactive. Somebody here was telling me how much she enjoyed going to it with her 6-year-old grandson. One thing I'd like to let you know about is our collaborations. We work with a number of performing arts organizations. We've had different kinds of performances, whether it's in the courtyard or in the Planetarium Theater itself. We work with the Ringling College of Art and Design, the University of South Florida, State College of Florida, Manatee County School District. Last year, we were fortunate to work with the school district. Every fourth grader in Manatee County came to the museum for a program that was very specifically tied to areas of the curriculum. We funded the admissions, and Manatee Education Foundation helped with transportation. So all of these things have us busting at the seams. I hope you have heard about our plans for the future. We have a wonderful campaign going. We'll be bringing a whole new early learning center to help people discover the wonderful things that are in their lives every day. Thank you.
Coming up.
Because people bringing businesses here want to see what there is to do for their workers, their employees, their children in the cultural arts, and it says go 20 minutes south. I think that's something that could be changed.
I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Carson Cooper. We're listening to highlights from a recent Manatee Tiger Bay Club discussion on philanthropy and the arts.
Now we are at the point in the program where members can approach the microphone and ask questions.
We know that incentive-based economic development provides financial enticements to get businesses to move to an area. However, in the last 3 years, there's been a growing movement to have place-based economic development. So my question is, how does arts, culture, and heritage stimulate and support economic prosperity? And I'm looking directly at Janine because I know she has a lot to say on this.
Economic prosperity from a perspective of live entertainment is something that strategically we've looked at over the last 3 years. We have to understand that in a growing culture where grant dollars aren't as flourishing as they were before, we have had to diversify what we provide. So it's not just about, as we spoke, the Broadway series, but also providing opportunities for businesses to come in and use the spaces that we have or opportunities for them to share in what we're doing to provide a marketplace for their clients. So once where you used to maybe bring your clients to a dinner lunch, and speak to them over a business plan, you have an opportunity now where we have built plans around embracing your higher level clients to give back to them a thank you. And so again, looking at a model where we're trying to provide opportunities for us as an organization to be self-sustainable and moving forward with what we have been following is no margin, no mission. And so providing the margin of economics through unique partnerships in the business field.
I don't know that I can answer that question as well as Janine did, but I would like to say that if you go to our economic development website and you look under things to do, culture and arts, it says this. I wrote this down. I typed this down. It says, quote, less than a 20-minute drive south from downtown Bradenton is an opera company, a ballet company, and a symphony orchestra, end quote. I feel that Bradenton could replace that with, here in Bradenton, we have our own symphony orchestra. We have, maybe, I don't know much about ballet. I don't know how, you know, I can do that, but certainly I've advocated for several years of Bradenton being able to support a Bradenton Symphony Orchestra, because people bringing businesses here want to see what there is to do for their workers, their employees, their children in the cultural arts, and it says go 20 minutes south. I think that's something that could be changed.
And I think there's one more component that's hard to quantify with dollars per se, but that's education. Almost all of our arts or culture organizations have a key partnership with the education system in our counties, mm-hmm. and that makes a big difference, because that's not something that the school systems can necessarily do on their own. We bring a professional approach to it, and we also help bring private dollars to the public education system, which is key to prosperity.
My name is Becky Kness. I'm the CEO of Just for Girls Academy. I'm also on the board of the Tiger Bay Club. I've got a question for all of you relating to the importance of arts and education, that there is science behind the cognitive and brain development of children. So I wondered if you could all speak to what you've been doing or what you could be doing to help grow and develop arts within the educational system here and within youth organizations here.
Well, at the Village of the Arts, there's been some reach-out programs to the local schools to bring kids in for either some classroom, some larger projects, just to bring them to feel that atmosphere. One thing that the Village is doing this year, it's kind of a give back to the schools. We're collecting school supplies for the entire month of August, and we just started the marketing on that to give back to two local elementary schools. And both of them, one of their teachers actually lives in the Village, where she brings students in to her gallery and to do different classes. I think that's the biggest part that the Village has to offer, and what we've done in the past by inviting children in, whether it's 8 to 80, because many times the 80-year-olds are probably more childish than the younger ones, and enjoy it more. Thanks.
Understanding that transportation dollars in the school system of Manatee County was not available this past year for really everyone to come and enjoy a performance, if you're a third grader or a fourth grader, all the way through high school. What we have done in providing a new program is we now, our dramature group, which is our 55-year-old and above seniors who come to us during the day, are now going to be going into the classrooms next year. And they're going to be doing one of two different required reading presentations. So they'll either be presenting To Kill a Mockingbird at the high school level or The Diary of Anne Frank at the middle school level. We will be going into the individual English classes where the literary the work has already been read, and then reading excerpts of that in costume, and then interacting with the kids in a series of improv that will build confidence and also awareness that truly some of the great works are still alive and well.
At the museum, we try to work at both formal education level as well as informal science ed primarily. Working with the early learning folks and the Early Learning Coalition, both in Manatee and Sarasota counties, for our family nights on the first Saturday of most months, we do have programs that specifically work with them to bring their kids there. We were able to participate and provide a summer learning day so that any student from Sarasota or Manatee County was able to come to the museum for free that day and with one parent or chaperone. And so it was a great day. We had more than 500 kids, or almost 500 kids that day. So it was fabulous. And we intend to stay very involved with that. On the informal science ed side, we have summer camps. We also do outreach to school programs, outreach for counties, all of that good stuff. During the summertime, the huge number of the various summer camps, whether it's with the counties or other kind of independent kid-oriented organizations, come to the museum. Again, we work with many of them so that there are scholarships for those visits. And part of our expansion is going to be specifically focused at early learners. The idea of stimulating and facilitating that curiosity that we all have as kids. We enjoy thinking. We ask the questions. How does this work? Why is that? How does this happen? That's science, is how does it happen? What makes it happen? And what we've come to in our planning is that everything you really need to be able to answer those questions and learn to enjoy thinking and that process of discovery that is learning, you can find in your own backyard. And so we'll be creating the Mosaic Backyard Universe, which is to provide a safe, consistent experience, an area where kids can have a facilitated experience, but go through that discovery process with whoever, whether it's family, caregiver, schools, or whatever. So we're looking at the early learning in the next level.
So at the State College of Florida, one of my jobs is to recruit students to come to the State College of Florida from the local band and orchestras. Every year over a course of a school year, I am in every single band room and orchestra room in Manatee County and Sarasota County, not just talking to students, but rehearsing them. And the directors will call me and say, "Help, we have a concert next week. Can you come in and clinic my group?" That sort of thing. So I personally am in all the schools. Obviously, at the State College of Florida, we offer scholarships to those students to come and be on all of our ensembles. Cassandra Holmes, the executive director of the State College of Florida Foundation, we've been working together for a year, and I think we just about have a new initiative funded called the Presidential Quartet in honor of Dr. Carol Probstfield. And the Presidential Quartet is a full scholarship for two violins, a viola, and a cellist that will go to area events and perform not only for the college events, but we could send them to the schools. As far as the Pops Orchestra goes, we give free tickets to our concerts to all of, we send about 20 tickets per school to band, orchestra, and choir directors for them to pass out. We give tickets this year to the Pace Center for Girls, and we do what we can to, it's hard to go to them, easier to bring them to us, which is if they'll just come. That's where that is. So thank you.
That's it for today's show. We would love for you to join us for an upcoming taping of Florida Matters. We'll be hosting a town hall meeting on the rise of HIV infections in Florida. The taping will be on Tuesday, September 1st at the University of South Florida Sarasota Manatee campus. We have more information at WUSFnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters tab. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.